afternoon, everyone. It's Thursday, 5 p.m. You're here with Antonia, and so now you know. We have had a very eventful week. The last time I saw you, we didn't quite have a president, a new president-elect, right? So there's a lot of drama that's happened since then to now. So I hope you are well. I hope you are safe, as we always say, with our social distancing and our mask. I hope you took all those precautions. And if you were one of those that was celebrating in the streets, I hope you got tested. Please go get tested, because although people were very joyous and happy, I still was very frightful of all those that were in the community. So we have a lot to talk about this week. And I have my friend, Chanel. We're going to let her in here on our camera. So it was a very eventful week. There was a lot going on. So I thought I would bring my friend. Hello, Chanel. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. So welcome to So Now You Know. A little bit about my show and my listeners is I try to bring on the show friends and family and anyone that I meet in my path that is doing some amazing work. And then just to share it on this platform. And just a little background, Chanel and I met over the summer. We were on a panel together for the in our local community. It seems like it was so long ago.
I know.
So much has happened since then.
Yes.
And I just thought, who better to be here today after this election and all the drama that has been happening? Actually, since the summer. Some of the stuff, you know, was popping up over the summer. Now it's really out there because of the election. So let's just get into this because there's so many questions I want to ask you. So let's just start with you and your background. So can you share a little bit with our listeners your work?
Sure. I am currently the Director of Equity and Inclusion at Greens Farms Academy in Westport, Connecticut. And we are a pre-K through 12th grade independent school. So private school. I've been doing diversity work, doing work in the field of diversity, equity, and inclusion for, if I can date myself, about 20 years. Started off really in higher education, working for colleges and universities before coming to the pre-K 12 school level, and also did some work in nonprofits, consulting, you know, just any way that I can do this type of work, have these type of conversations is what my passion is, what's most important to me. So whether it's young folks, older folks, my most memorable training was with AARP. Okay. I think you've heard me tell this story before. So I've trained everyone from the tiniest of the tiny, the babies, to the most mature person you can think of. The oldest person in that room at the time was 85, 90 years old.
So this conversation, it never gets old.
It never gets
old. And I, you know, we kind of do a similar work. And so I just want to get right into this because I feel, especially since the last panel that you and I were on, and then when we were talking about this with a lot of things that were going on in the private school sector and just a lot of equity and diversity and issues that were going on with kids that are in these environments, as you talked mm-hmm. about in these independent schools. And so I want to talk a little bit broader because a lot of time these words are being out there, equity, inclusion, diversity, right? And I think we had talked about everyone has a call to action. It just seems like everybody and their mom has a call to action for their business, for their school, of how they are going to, what I feel is one, either self-reflect on the stuff that they've been doing all along and some organizations kind of coming to terms or asking themselves to come to terms with systemic racism and things like that. So I think it's interesting that people like you and I who've been doing this work, we're kind of that go-to person to right. ask for clarity, have a discussion. And I will say this, a lot of times, Black friends would say, wow, you know, all my white friends are reaching out to me. They're asking me, especially after George Floyd, how are you doing? And I kind of felt bad because I was like, nobody is reaching out to me. Like no one is checking in on me. Does that mean I, you know, need to diversify my friends? So how did you feel? Like, and let's just take that back to, I guess, from our summer. Did you see the conversation changing the focus on equity, inclusion, and diversity? And what stuck out to you the most that shocked people about, like, I just feel like a lot of times people thought, oh, wow, this just happened. How is this happening? And it's like, no, it's kind of been here a minute.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. Just, I can't even say the world woke up, because, you know, I always tell folks, let's be specific. Let's name who it is or what it is we're talking about. I feel like white people woke up. A mirror was put in front of many people, right? And the what was seemingly somehow invisible to them, or, you know, they chose not to see, suddenly became hyper visible. There was no way to not see, to not pay attention. As you said, you know, folks of color, especially Black folks, were kind of like, welcome to our world. This has been going on for so long. Where have you been? Mm-hmm. Welcome to the conversation. Join me at the table. what was, I guess, shocking to me, if we, you know, use that word, is the number of people, as you say, who reached out. On the one hand, the are you okays, you know, checking ins. But then on the other hand, what can I read? What can I do? What resources can you give me? And, you know, my visceral reaction always was Google, because the same reading list I'm about to give you is on Google. So, or someone sent me, but just the desire for education, for resources, the go-to. I became the go-to for folks to learn more. So a conversation was started in a different way, I think, this summer.
And I think in my perspective, like, you know, a lot of my background is in criminal justice and in being a criminal defense attorney. And my focus on, like, juvenile justice is probably, you know, biased in that. So perhaps that's why people didn't reach out to me to see how I was doing, because they knew I was going to be like, you know, it's not that I'd be angry, but it was kind of like, are you serious that this has been going on for so long? So how did you feel that you would start broaching that conversation with that person who comes up to you, either being naive, not wanting to be part of reality? Because I think the other part of it is that, and we've seen this in social media and in media, this, like, we're supposed to let it go, right? We're supposed to take the person's guilt or however they're feeling about it, and we're supposed to calm them down. I think it was This Is Us that just did a great show a couple of weeks back. I don't know if you watched that, where they talk about that. Like, this wasn't our burden to lift.
Right.
Opposed to have a conversation. And I kind of felt that on that panel that we were on. It kind of, you know, like, yeah, we were probably the correct people to be there, but I don't know how willing people were to hear or listening to what we were saying. I don't know if
but
you
that's
felt
the
that
thing.
Way.
I feel like now we were at a pivotal moment. You know, is it Malcolm Gladwell who talks about the tipping point, right? The George Floyd seemed to be that tipping point. Everything that happened, it was the perfect storm, you know, coming, I can't even say coming out of COVID because we're still in it, but, you know, everything that led us up into that moment. I think people were listening, people were craving information. The number of webinars that I participated in or that were offered throughout that period around the same or similar topics. You know, people were craving the information. And I hope, right, it is my hope, and I'm not an optimist by any means, but it is my hope that people were in fact listening. Again, simply going back to the number of people who reached out to me for resources, reading lists, et cetera.
And has that maintained? Do you feel like that has kind of plateaued? Are people still wanting to hear that? And in lieu of what we'll get to this later in the show, this whole election that we went through, and surprise, I mean, not surprising, but you saw how close it was. The numbers that were there was a clear indication that, yeah, people are listening and we can have these conversations, but what is it going to take to move that needle?
I think the needle may have been moved, obviously not as much as we had hoped or we would like. But, you know, again, in my sphere, I see the needle has been moved in, you know, the parent community, the educational community, the educators that I'm in contact and communication with, folks looking to diversify the curriculum or teach, right, anti-bias curriculum, that sort of thing. So I think those tended to be the audiences that we reach, especially parents of young children, seeking ways to have these conversations with their young children, whether they had it before, how did they start, and whether they were doing it before, how did they talk to them about the racial violence and unrest that was unfolding right before their very eyes. The election is interesting and how close it was. In some ways, not shocking, but in some ways, yes, shocking and disappointing, because it did paint a very, in some ways, bleak picture of the racial divide, if you will, as we think about diversity, equity, and inclusion and social justice in general. But it may have plateaued in some ways. The requests are a little less, but, you know, life goes on. Everything has gotten underway. We are back at school, at my school, in person, and have been since end of August. And things are busy. So life has picked up and moved on.
Do you feel that it may be more the change is going to come by generation? That because we have such young parents and really young adults that were doing the protests, that were creating the different platforms, that were having the conversations, do you feel that is where perhaps the needle moves a little bit longer? And then the other question is, can we as Black folks, especially our generation, can we wait?
Was it Martin Luther King and John Lewis who talked about, you know, not waiting? Mm-hmm. Right. And how long must we wait? We've been waiting. But I don't do this work with the expectation that I will see change in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not an optimist, but it is that hope that keeps me going. And I see, you know, the picture on the wall behind you talking about hope. But it is that hope that it will be the generations that follow. It is that hope that keeps me working and teaching in independent schools, predominantly white institutions with low numbers of students who look like me. And I always say I am in these places and spaces as much for them as I am for the white students, because it is important that they learn to have these conversations as well, and, you know, see folks like me working for change. So don't know which generation it's going to be, but I do have that hope that change will come.
And I don't think we can do it alone, right? So I do think part of the whole conversation and allyship, right, is that we have to have a more diverse voices at the table if we're going to be impactful in doing this work.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So talk about your institute that you started and you're a founder of. What brought that about? Oh, and actually, why don't we get ready to take a break, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about that. You all listening to Antonia on So Now You Know, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You listeners looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talk Radio NYC with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply send us a message on our website, talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for the Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening. The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back. We're talking to Chanel Henry. And before we came to the break, Chanel, I wanted you to talk a little bit about the Institute for Teaching Diversity and Social Justice. How did that come about and what created your passion to want to do more of that work?
Sure. Again, you know, I've been doing this work for a long time, particularly working with educators in, you know, gaining the skills to bring diversity, equity, and inclusion into their curriculum. And the Institute for Teaching Diversity and Social Justice was started by myself and my friend and colleague in the work, Kiathi Joshi, who she and I went to grad school together at the University of Massachusetts Amherst in the social justice education program. So through working and, you know, doing this work with educators with Kiathi, really sitting down to think about how can we, what would it take? What would the skills, right? How long, how many days would it take to share with educators everything that whether you're an independent school educator, public school educator, how do you bring anti-bias curriculum to your students? How do we create safer schools and more equitable schools for all, right? Not just students, but for all people. And so we decided to start this institute and really do a deep dive into the work that she and I had been doing for so long. And we talked about it for some time before we launched the first institute. One of those, you know, field of dreams, if you build it, will they come moments? And we were surprised. I was definitely surprised at the number of people who showed up every summer, every year, really craving this information. And, you know, she and I do it perhaps in a way that's different from some of the other professional development programs that are out there that do this work. So, yeah, it is definitely both a passion project for both of us.
So where would a school start to create that anti-bias curriculum?
Certainly you can, you know, contact us or we have resources on our website as well at www.idsj.us. And everyone's welcome to attend the Institute. I think the first step is really to start evaluating self. Before you evaluate your curriculum, evaluate self. What do you know? What are your blind spots? How can you find out what they are? You know, doing some additional research, reading, education on your own, understanding who you are in terms of your own self-identity. So, you know, really starting to interrogate and unpack that before we move into curriculum, what it is that you're teaching, how you're teaching it, who are you teaching about, what are the narratives, you know, are we telling single stories about groups or individuals, and then, you know, really starting to branch out from there to look at the holistic curriculum and how all of that connects to people, places, policies, et cetera.
I never get the pushback of creating a diverse curriculum. And, you know, as we talk about these predominant, especially here in Connecticut, independent schools that are predominantly white, you would think in education and academia that you would want a diverse curriculum, that as an educator, you do want to be inclusive, you know, especially in history and English. And so I'm wondering, what is that barrier? Is it the schools themselves that hold the teachers to a certain, in a certain space that tells them this is what you must teach? We know we see that in public schools and we know that there's teaching to the test and so forth. But I've always wondered why in these independent schools or places where you would think they would have more liberty to have a more inclusive curriculum, but they don't. What would you say is part of the reason that that doesn't happen as easily?
In my experience, it's been the fantasy or ideology versus reality, right? So we may say we want a diverse curriculum or a diverse student body. We want to diversify our faculty and staff, you know, this notion of diversity. However, in reality, the pushback tends to be the rub that happens when things get uncomfortable or when you are talking about, you know, equity and social justice or just justice of groups of people. There's the narrative that has been told to us. You mentioned history, right? Whose history, which version of history are we teaching? You know, that I mentioned Martin Luther King earlier. We've romanticized Martin Luther King so much that when we talk about the real Martin Luther King, if we talk about him, he was a complicated person. Is that the history that we're teaching, or are we only teaching the fact that he had a dream?
Right.
So again, once we really start diving into all of the disciplines, I think what happens and where that pushback, and I always try to go beneath the surface of the pushback. Where is it coming from? Is it fear? Right? Fear of the unknown, or when we get uncomfortable. Uncomfortable does not mean unsafe. Right. But when we get uncomfortable and now we want to push back, we could also be pushing back against, you know, what we were taught to believe. And now my child is learning something different in the curriculum, or, you know, our teacher is saying something different than what I'm saying at home. So when those rubs happen, I think the pushback happens. You know, diversity doesn't just mean we open our doors and let everyone in and everything's going to be okay. Right. No, what do we do after we let everyone in?
Right?
So
let's talk about that in some of these definitions. Because like I was saying at the beginning of the show, you know, these are the buzzwords. Equity, mm-hmm. inclusion, diversity, you know, everyone's got it in their statements. Everyone is saying that. So in the simplest terms, if you were to explain it as an expert, let's talk about equity. What are we talking about when we say equity?
Equity is giving everyone what they need to be successful, right? Or what they need to survive, what they need to access the same level of opportunity that others have access to. And it may come easier, right, to that person or that group than it does to another. You know, when I think of equity versus equality, equality is giving everyone the same thing. Well, we have to recognize that not every person or not every group needs the same thing. Some people may need something different in order to survive or have the same level of access to opportunity that you have. We explain it to kids in the classroom in terms of, you know, someone injures themselves and you give everyone a Band-Aid. Well, if I broke my leg, what's a Band-Aid going to do for me, right? Johnny got a cut on their finger. I broke my leg. Giving me and Johnny a Band-Aid is, right, that's equality. We both got the same thing, but I might need more than a Band-Aid. And giving Johnny a cast for a cut is not going to help Johnny either, because that's not what they need, right? So, you know, we try and talk about that difference between equality and equity. And then justice is fairness, right? How are we thinking about what is fair and just? I talk about diversity as being a given. Even in independent schools, we can, you know, not be satisfied with the amount of diversity that we have, but diversity does exist. Inclusion is, what do we do after everyone gets there, right? The sense of belonging. Do I feel like I belong in this institution? Do I feel like I belong to the table? I've been invited. Brené Myers talks about being invited to the dance, right? You've invited me, but have you included me? I'm here. So, you know, thinking about terminology and the difference between diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice.
I don't know if you feel this, but I feel sometimes here where we live in Lower Fairfield County, which is its bubble in itself, right? I always say, you know, nowhere else is it like here in our community. And, you know, and it's wealth, And I think a lot of times when we talk about equity and inclusion, that piece of wealth comes in and people just want to stop at that. Like, oh, I get it. You don't live in this multi-million dollar neighborhood. And that's the equity. Like, oh, you're from here. And instead of looking like, well, you could be that multimillionaire and you could still sit next to this other child and they still, like you were just explaining, have different needs.
Absolutely.
And I think that to me is the frustration in doing the work in this area because people aren't looking through that lens of equality and color and meeting people where they're at. They're just looking at that economic structure. Because now I think with this whole election, now that whole piece comes in, right? We had a president who I don't even know if he could define any of those words. In fact, he wouldn't, right? The last thing that I think he did, he had the executive order where he banned in the federal system any conversation or training of equity, inclusion, diversity. And to me, that was like a clear sign. Mm-hmm. Even worse than people who are like, oh, I don't see color. That was, to me, was... I just felt like that was something that people could easily just be dismissive of.
And it comes back to, you know, what I mentioned earlier about the rub, when things get uncomfortable or things speak against the narrative that you've learned growing up. And it's also tied to our individual identity, whether our identity as American or our identity as a person of color or an ethnic person. You know, when I think about his statements about, you know, DEI work being anti-American, and when we talk about history, if we're teaching the hard history of the United States and the true history of the United States, it's not all, you know, how we won the West and manifest destiny. There's a lot of oppression. There's a lot of systemic. Everyone's talking now about systemic racism. This has existed way before George Floyd and police brutality or, you know, violence. This country has a history of that. And as you start to peel back those layers and look at systemic oppression of various groups, it gets uncomfortable. It gets messy. It gets painful. Yet it's not necessarily speaking out against the country, but it gives us a different perspective of our country and how it was founded. And we can talk about who it was founded for, right? And so that, to some, that kind of conversation to some may feel, in fact, you know, anti-American, to use those words, or again, coming back to, well, what are you telling my child? Right? What are you telling us? And then the guilt, right? He talked about in his executive order, folks crying in these trainings and feeling guilt. And we have to push through that. We have to push through that.
Again, you're the kinder, gentler person. I just said, I do hear that, right? As Black folks, we see it and we hear it. Like, some people don't hear it, but we as Black people and people of color, when we see those conversations, it hits us like, are you for real? Like, did you not read about redlining? Do you not understand how some of our neighbor, like, there's so right. many parts of American history that you can't get around. Like, it just happened. And you can look at the data. You can look at the history and it's there. You can't get around it. So I think it's selective memory that a lot of people want to have. And I think and you just kind of mentioned this, what I also find frustrating is, you know, parents, our generation, right? Our age, who are ready to say, get over it. It's over. It's done. Why are you explaining this to my child? Why does my kid have to understand this? That to me, again, is something that our president has just created that platform to be dismissive of a lot of the work that we're doing. So I want to talk a little bit about that because I do. I sit there and I'm like, what part of history I get the history that you didn't learn in school because that's there. Mm-hmm. But right. then what you're saying is, as far as racism doesn't exist, systemic racism isn't there. It's like, oh, but it is. So we're going to take another quick break and we're going to come back and talk about that, about the reality and then the perception of doing the work. You're listening to Now You Know. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
My Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show, A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a curious person, always asking questions? Do you desire to be in the know? Then join me, Antonia, host of So Now You Know, Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc. Listen in as I attempt to satisfy that curiosity. I will be talking with amazing everyday people. Join the fun. So Now You Know on Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
So I'm going to start asking you, I was waiting for you to get here because I have like my personal questions I want to ask you. So what is your opinion about this whole change in the conversation from people of color? And I want to hear your perspective of how you feel about the term people of color, and should we continue to use that term?
As opposed to changing it to what?
Black people. Like just said, black people, a Latina, everyone. So before I want to get your opinion about it.
So to my understanding, there's no universal change or move to this. And I always tell people it is personal preference, right? How individuals self-identify. I'm big on self-identification. I don't believe we have enough opportunities in our daily lives and lived experiences to identify ourselves for ourselves. So, you know, we can debate whether it is black or African American, right? Mm-hmm. Or mm-hmm. black or person of color. And who is a person of color? I think all these terms have been, on one hand, created to unify. On the other hand, not everyone buys into it. And so I'm not surprised that people are confused what to call people anymore.
And I sometimes I feel like it is an easy out, right? Especially if you're not a person of color. Uh-huh. Right? If you're not a person of color, it's very easy to put everyone under that umbrella of, you know, if you're talking about diversity and we're talking about, oh, person of color. But to me, I'm a black woman. Mm-hmm. Right. Like if you're talking about me, she's not a person. She is a black woman. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting now that we've had this culture conversation that's been going on in George Floyd. We want to identify as it. Right. We want to identify as Black Lives Matter because this is happening to the black community based on the history that y'all want to ignore. But the history that has happened to us, our lives matter. And I think that sometimes I've had these conversations with people where they just want to say, well, all lives matter. All people of color lives matter. It's yep, they do. But for this
and yes, and
they're going to stay right. So I know that there's this conversation of whether or not to use that. Or so I do think it is important to use because it's been around forever. But I've never thought of myself or used it as, oh, I'm a person of color. It's always been, I'm Black. Like I'm, and just like you said, some people will identify as, and I was trying to remember the other day when we started using African
American. Right.
Do you know when
we started that? African American, I believe, came from the 70s or 80s or so. It was, it's coined to Jesse Jackson during a political movement as a way to politicize and you know, garner folks of color, if you will. But again, it's when we think about terminology, the shoe, one size does not fit all. And in some ways, it is an umbrella term that all of these races, ethnicities, cultures get lumped into. And not everyone agrees with that. So that's a great question, kind of like, you know, who created this? Who decided that I was now a person of color, right? And I giggle at times when people slip up and say color people, because people are still confused. Person of color, colored people, right? So we know that colored people is an outdated term, but I don't vilify the folks who unconsciously slip into that language because they've misconstrued or mispronounced person of color or people of color. But, you know, again, I tend to go with how the individual identifies. And so in my conversation with you and hearing you say you identify as Black, I wouldn't necessarily call you a person of color because I know you don't necessarily buy into that term. You prefer to be called a Black person or a Black woman or, you know, just staying away from this lumping. Even the term Asian or Latinx, right? Or Black. There are so many people under that umbrella that we're talking about, and yet we all get lumped into that one box we check. What does it mean to be Black?
I had to go learn all the different Latinx and Latina. I had to go, I did, I'll be honest. I had to go learn that you now have to talk about them differently. So it is a learning curve. But I think what really brought it to light is when we started using BLM, right? When we started talking about Black Lives Matter. And what I thought was just amazing was this visceral effect on people that they just couldn't say it. They just could not say Black Lives Matter. And to me, it all just goes back that you're trying to, we're validating Black men. And people just didn't want to do that, right? They just were not going to do that. So I always think it's an interesting perspective of people of like, well, why couldn't you say that? Like, we get that all lives matter. So do you think in the conversations that you've been having and the trainings that you've been doing, especially with kids, because I don't think, and in the ages we're talking like, you know, K through 12 and in that environment, the kids get it. I feel like the children, whether it's the 5-year-old, the kindergartner, or it's the, like, they get it. And I'm just wondering how we manage that with society and what's going on in this world and what platforms are there for the kid. Like, I feel like our generation was stressed out and we kind of were going with it. This generation's like, forget this. We got to move on and we got to do it this way. But sometimes I see parents kind of pushing, bringing their kids back in, and it's like, dude, that's just not going to work, I feel. But you're more in the schools and seeing the vibe of the different kids. Do you see that tension amongst young students?
To some degree. This summer, I was actually pleasantly surprised at the number of students I saw out there, you know, on the front lines, at the protests, the rallies, the marches, participating, writing signs, just active. And, you know, pushing back to the schools to also be active and step up and have a voice. It's a level of activism from students that I have not seen in quite some time, especially at this level. I saw it, you know, at the undergraduate level in the colleges and universities at one time, but working in the K-12 space, particularly in independent schools, with this culture of niceness, and we don't make waves, and we don't, you know, sit in the administration building, although now they do. Some students, some schools certainly do. You know, it was heartening to actually see, particularly this summer, the number of students who felt a call to action.
But then what about their parents?
To some degree, parents supported them. I think, again, it comes back to like you mentioned, just their level of understanding. It's a different generation. And, you know, certainly parents have their own view of race relations and things of that sort. But also speaking as a parent myself, I know I can speak from a place of fear. My children were out there, my first thing, and it's during COVID this summer, right? So my first thing is like, I want you to be safe.
Right.
I need you to wear a mask. You're talking about being in a crowd full of folks. So a lot of my anxiety stemmed from fear. And I imagine those parents of, you know, children may have had a sense of fear that they did or didn't articulate as well.
So what do you think, and I'm sure you're watching that election. What do you think was going on? I was always wondering what was going on with the commentators that were talking about it, because there was a big difference between Fox and what was happening on CNN. But then there was just also, I felt this narrative that was coming out of how they were talking about different parts of the country and people, right? Philadelphia was definitely, you know, it was the black community and the language that was being used around that. And then we looking at different other parts of the country, it wasn't so obvious or evident, but the numbers were there. Like, it was clear that across this country, we do have some very conservative folks. So what did you take on that? Like, what was your take when you look through your lens of equity and inclusion? What role does the media play in defining those roles for us?
Oh, the media is a big influencer, not just in diversity and inclusion, but in general, right? It in some ways defines and sets culture. In some ways, it mirrors back to us what our culture is. You know, it's kind of the what came first, chicken or the egg, who creates or dictates who we are as a society. So as I watch and listen, I actually chuckled during the election because I realized, or during the commentary of the election, because I realized, like you said, if you change the channel, the narrative changes. So what is truth anymore, right? What is truth? Whose perspective are we listening to? And that's how I teach my students and getting them to really understand and look through media messages and find the narrative, find the perspective, make meaning of what they're hearing. All perspectives, right? All sides, if you will. But certainly I think just how everything played out that evening and even still today, it is disappointing, I think is the word that I'm feeling or the feeling that I'm feeling, that it does in some ways reflect not just conservatism or economics or what have you, but it does reflect a very polarizing view of race relations in this country, of diversity, equity, and inclusion. What are people voting for? And then what is the reciprocal effect of that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I kind of look at it this way. Majority of people were looking at the president and being, okay, he's just going to go. Like, he just is not presidential and he's just a knucklehead. So he's got to go. But they still were like, yeah, but we're going to keep those other guys, those other people still in their spots, knowing that they weren't too far from him. They just probably maybe knew how to articulate things better, knew not to put their business in the streets, you know, were probably more effective in passing legislation and doing other stuff. But everyone was pretty much like, yeah, the president got to go. So I thought that was interesting to see that play out. We're going to get ready to take our last break and then we'll be right back. So you're listening to Antonia and So Now You Know.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Thank you. Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back. We're listening to Antonia and So Now You Know. So, Chanel, what do you see is the work that needs to be done in this inequity, inclusion, diversity in this space? Like, as we started the show, this has always been here. This has been a narrative that we have been talking about for several years. This work has been getting done. So what do you think is really crucial as we look at the next year or two in this work?
I feel like what is necessary, and, you know, not to sound cliche or obvious, but it has to be education. And I don't just mean training, right? Folks need to open up. Walls need to come down. Folks need to be willing to be uncomfortable, to get messy, and just have the dialogue. I hear people mention all the time about, you know, being afraid to ask questions, afraid to, you know, open their mouths, make a statement because they're going to be labeled, right? Conservative has become a label. We certainly know racist is a label. Even, you know, liberal is a label. But how do you really communicate with someone across the aisle? Communicate through and across difference. And we mentioned this earlier when we were talking about curriculum, but being willing to lean into those conversations when the narrative changes, right? More than just the single story that we grew up learning or knowing or believing. Some of that rub happens based on identity, based on belief, based on ideology. But how do we not lose our humanity in that, mm-hmm. right? So I can disagree with you. I can have learned something other than what you learned and how you learned it. I can still, at the end of it, believe what I believe, but how do I not, you know, vilify you, vilify the individual in this cancel culture, cancel the individual, and, you know, that bias not become bigotry.
Right. How do you think the work needs to get done in the workplace? Because I do agree with you. I think in the educational world, that needle will move a lot quicker. And I think this generation, as we're teaching our kids and our staff and we're changing curriculum, that change will be there sooner than what I think will come in the workplace. So what do you think the conversation, and hopefully we'll get rid of, you know, his ban in the federal system of not teaching diversity and equity in federal places, but what do you think needs to happen in the workforce? Because I do think a lot of companies associate, you know, I do think a lot of them that have made statements and have come out, and we saw every major corporation came out about how they're going to do the work. And we know usually, affirmative action for a very long time was the diversity, right? Was the mm-hmm. way or the mechanism that companies were holding themselves to the standard of being diversified. What do you feel is now needed in the employment sector to make sure that the equity, the inclusion, the diversity is happening?
Policies, programs, and people. right? Everything you just named, even talking about affirmative action. We need education or re-education on the purpose behind affirmative action, right? And again, going back to diversity, okay, so now you've hired all these people and you just plopped them organization, and now what? Now what? Right? So everything I said about, it wasn't just about the educational space. It totally, you know, is important and imperative for the workplace as well. Be it training, be it education, be it understanding, be it, you know, looking at our hiring and making sure we are hiring a diverse staff and workforce. But what are we doing to understand the individuals that we are now inviting into the corporation? Who are we as a corporation? The day all of those statements came out, again, the snarky side of me was like, you know, so you do this today, you do this now. Where were you before? Why didn't you say this before now? What has changed? What has changed? Why now? Okay, we can point to George Floyd and everyone waking up and saying, oh my gosh, we need to change and be better. I can get behind that. And so now it's November 12th, and where are we with those statements? How much progress have we made? Did we write them and forget them back in the summer? Or are we still working to be that, you know, equitable, inclusive organization that we said we were going to be on that, what was it, Blackout Tuesday, when everyone blacked out their screens on social media and all these statements came out? So if we are a conscious organization, we are working towards all of that. It's not just about product, right? But it's about people and policies and programs.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's always, there was a conversation that was coming out about looking at leadership in these big companies, and even leadership in other companies. Like, are those that are at the top willing to let power go? Right. Because that, I think, is part of the inclusion, is knowing that you need to diversify those that are at the top to allow those groups of people that have never been there. So to me, what would that take as far as that higher leadership? I guess I think you'll say it comes to the person, right? The person that's doing the hiring. But I also wanted, I don't know, I think it, well, I'll let you answer that, because me, Debbie Downer, would be like, it's not going to happen. You know, they're going to put the statements out. They're going to hire some people to do this and that. But they're not going to let that go, that power go.
But there's letting it go, but then they're sharing it, right? It's not just about letting it go, but how do we share access to opportunity? What paths to leadership are we creating? Are we hiring the same people we always hire? Do they all look the same? Are they all coming from the same places? Do we all have to be golfing at the same golf course to get the access to the internship, right? Or are we really looking at all of the things that we're doing to see how different groups of people actually have access to the top? Part of it could mean, yes, maybe letting it go. It's time for me to step back. It's time for me to step down. It's time for me to allow someone else to join me, right, at the top. But another part of it could be looking at, well, how did I get here? Yeah. What path did I take? Who did I know? Or, you know, it's not just about working hard. Well, I worked hard to get here. I earned it. I hear that a lot. Yeah. And I always say, yes, and we're not taking that away from you. Right? When we're not trying to take that away from you. I just want people to recognize that there are other people they probably don't even see, right? Because of who they are or their privilege or their position. They might not even recognize that there are others working twice as hard and may still never reach where they are. So that's the give and take.
We didn't get to that word you just mentioned, which is another confused word for people, privilege. And I've spent a bunch of time, especially with white women, mm-hmm. trying to define it. And so we're going to wrap up the show quick, but talk a little bit about privilege. In your trainings and in the work that you've done in your history, how would you define privilege?
Access to opportunity, resources, unearned advantage. Just by virtue of being who you are, in the skin you're in, right? Self-identity. There are certain types of privileges, advantages that come with our various identities. And identities are intersectional. We have multiple identities. So while I may, you know, have disadvantages, and I talk to students about, you know, groups being pushed up, groups being pushed down. So while I may have some marginalized positionality in terms of being a person of color, right, being Black or being female, and we're talking systemically across the board, right, not as an individual per se, but as a group in this country, in the U.S., there are groups that by virtue of being born as they are, whether it's male or white or Christian, that, you know, has sustainable power that exists in this country. And it's not, I don't value that in terms of good or bad. I don't place value. I want folks to recognize, because one thing about privilege is that if I have it, I don't have to recognize that others don't, because I may not see it in myself.
Mm. That's right. That's a very good point. Very good point. So thank you so much for joining us, Chanel Henry. It's good to see you again. I missed
you.
I haven't seen you since the summer, so it's really good to see you. And you got your work cut out for you. And I'm so happy that things are going well at the schools, but I do believe that it is this younger generation that is getting out there and creating this narrative. And it's the truth. They're our future. So it's good to see that our future is going to have a different narrative unless the adults screw it up, right? Unless we mess it up. So I'm just looking, I mean, this election, if anything, I'm just hoping that we get out of their way. And right. I think that'll happen. I think it'll happen. But like you said, it may not be our lifetime, but it will happen. So thank you so much for joining us. I am going to ask you to come back, because I think we need to do the flip side of diversity, inclusion, equity within our own Black community. I think that's a whole nother conversation. But I think for us to move our people, we need to have that conversation. So thank you everybody for tuning in. You're listening to Antonia. So now you know, we will see you next Thursday at 5. And like I always say at the end of the show, I always tell everybody 5-6 feet. No, I'm saying 5, but it's 6 feet. The mask, wash your hands. COVID season, go get that flu shot. Stay happy and safe, and we will see everybody next week. Thank you so much, Chanel.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
All righty.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening. The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a curious person, always asking questions? Do you desire to be in the know? Then join me, Antonia, host of So Now You Know, Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc. Listen in as I attempt to satisfy that curiosity. I will be talking with amazing everyday people. Join the fun. So Now You Know on Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you listeners looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talk Radio NYC with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply send us a message on our website, talkradio.nyc.
Are you a
small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.